from KQED.
This is the California Report podcast. I'm John Sepulvedo coming to you from KCRW in Santa Monica.
And I'm Lily Jamali, just east of the campfire at North State Public Radio in Chico. The campfire is now the most destructive fire in state history, and it's likely also the deadliest. The death toll now stands at 29. There are still hundreds of people who are missing.
Well, there aren't as many people who are missing here in the Malibu region, but we do know that two people have died due to the Woolsey Fire. This fire, of course, began in Ventura County and quickly spread over to Los Angeles County. There's also a heavy police and security presence. In fact, I wasn't able to get into the perimeter because I didn't have a Los Angeles County press pass. The police were worried that I was part of a looting operation that they were trying to thwart.
Oh, wow. And John, it's interesting that you say that because looting is suddenly a big concern among law enforcement and authorities up here in Butte County as well. We started hearing them talking about that for the first time, really, last night at the Cal Fire press briefing over in Chico.
Now, we've known during the Thomas Fire and the North Bay fires that happened earlier, both very devastating fires. Of course, 44 people were killed in the complex that became known as the North Bay fires. But we didn't see looting as nearly as much of an issue in those fires. We also saw in those fires, though, something that we are seeing in these fires, which is the fire is indiscriminate in who it attacks, whether it's rich people in Southern California or poor people in Northern California, as KQED's Sonia Hudson tells us.
Sabine Coffey and Vicky Steindorf are teachers at Paradise Elementary, which is where they were when they got the notice to evacuate. They say it was around 8:30, 2 hours after the campfire started in a remote part of Butte County.
At that point, the glow and
it was dark.
Looked like 8 o'clock at night.
The fire was closing in, and all but four students had been picked up. Steindorf and Coffey weren't sure if they should all pile into one car or drive out separately with the students. In the end, they decided to leave together. They got their teaching credential together at Chico State and have been teaching at Paradise forever. Here's Steindorf.
And I said, I'm not going without you. We're not separating. We had all of us that we were going to have to pile into her car.
They got into Coffey's 4Runner and made their way down the canyon. The road out was clogged with cars.
We saw those houses that were burning on the side, and propane tanks are exploding, and the power poles are on. And I'm thinking, if those burn and fall,
which we saw they did later.
Yeah.
But and there was embers raining on. And
as the fire approached, there are reports that some abandoned their cars and fled on foot. Many didn't make it out. The campfire took at least 29 lives, and most of them in Paradise. Almost all of the town is gone, including their elementary school. And with each wildfire, the question is...
The question was specifically if we feel that we're giving enough time to evacuate.
That's audio from a press conference on Saturday night. Here's Butte County Sheriff Corey Honey's response.
So we use the best information that we can, and the fire that we were dealing with in Paradise moved so rapidly that we were chasing it.
With years of drought and high winds, wildfires burn through forests quickly and unpredictably. But Honey never really quite answered the question of whether residents were notified in time.
The Cal Fire truck showed up about 11 o'clock, came down to our house and said, you got to get out.
That's Alan Harthorne. He lives in the next canyon over from Paradise. I met him outside a roadblock leading into the evacuation zone. And that's also where I met Katie McCrary. Here's how she found out she needed to leave.
My neighbor came over and said they were evacuating.
McCrary's from Paradise and was waiting by the roadblock, hoping her missing son would come out. Of the dozen or so people I talked to, only one got a reverse 911 call or a text. Others were notified by Cal Fire or their neighbors. After the North Bay fires last October, local officials were criticized for not notifying residents sooner and not using enough cell phone alerts. They also came under scrutiny for lacking a well-coordinated approach to evacuations. In the wake of this tragic fire, similar questions are being asked. I'm Sonia Hudson, KQED News.
Now, while these fires are affecting two totally different communities, this morning there are questions of whether they were started in the same manner.
That's right, because as KQED's Ted Goldberg reported this weekend, utility companies reported disturbances near both fires shortly before they were reported. He joins us now from San Francisco. And Ted, let's start with the campfire. What did your reporting find?
So the PG&E filed something with the California Public Utilities Commission on around Thursday or Friday that indicated Thursday morning at around 6:15, there was an outage connected to a transmission line in a remote area of Butte County. That outage took place at 6:15, and it took place in the same similar area where the fire is believed to have started 14 minutes later. So there's an indication here that PG&E is saying to state regulators, it's possible, we don't know for sure, we're giving this information to you out of an abundance of caution, that our infrastructure may be tied to the fire. It's unclear if the fire was started from our infrastructure, if the fire somehow caused the outage, but we just want you guys to know this preliminary information.
And meanwhile, Ted, that phrase, an abundance of caution, is exactly what Southern California Edison said when they filed something with the California Public Utilities Commission, and they had it related to the Woolsey fire. What did you find with that reporting?
So again, they used the terms preliminary and abundance of caution, like you said, and they said that at around 2:22 that afternoon, on Thursday afternoon, there was an issue with a circuit tied to their Chatsworth substation, which is south of Simi Valley, which is the area where that fire began, 2 minutes later. So it's basically, in this particular situation, there's some technology that's on the circuit there. When the circuit detects a problem, it automatically shuts off. And that's the information that Southern California Edison passed along to the CPUC in a similar fashion that PG&E did with the commission as well.
And Ted, at this point, let's be clear. We cannot pin the fire causes on these events. Why are they important to note?
Both of the utilities have been tied to major wildfires in the past. It was just last week that Southern California Edison said that some of their infrastructure was tied to the Thomas Fire. And then, as we know here in the North Bay in Northern California, PG&E's infrastructure, according to Cal Fire, has been tied to a number of the large blazes from last year's North Bay fires. And we should also note that fire officials in both of these situations, the Woolsey Fire in Southern California and the Butte County Camp Fire, have emphasized we do not yet have a cause of both of these blazes.
KQED's Ted Goldberg joining us from San Francisco. Ted, thank you.
Thank you.
John, it's pretty uncommon for wildfires to get political, at least at this stage. But President Trump, in the last couple of days, has made it so. Last night, at the most recent Cal Fire press briefing in Chico, I spoke with Congressman Doug LaMalfa, a Republican who represents this area. Congressman Doug LaMalfa, thanks for being on with us.
Yeah, sure.
Why don't we start with what the federal government is doing right now to help folks in Paradise, who lived in Paradise and elsewhere in Butte County, who have been affected by these fires?
Well, each step of the way, there's been a declaration of disaster process there, first to get firefighting funds, so that, so there's no issue with funding, and nobody will be shy about bringing their equipment up here. So that was done. Then a next round at FEMA put through that the president declared on disaster to help aid in making sure the funding's there for the firefighting, as well as temporary housing for people, for those that are displaced. And then the final round is the major disaster declaration that comes. That's where the major dollars roll in order to rebuild the aspects of the community that are appropriate for those types of dollars, infrastructure and helping people with homes.
I have to ask, has the tweet from President Trump come up in any of your conversations, the one essentially blaming California for the scope of fires like this one?
Also, it's just mostly media chasing that one. I mean, most people I talk to understand that he's talking about maybe a longer term issue of what are we going to do about fuel reduction instead of doing nothing about it. But that's not the conversation we want to have right now, is what do we do to help people in this situation. But he wasn't talking about the funding of what we're talking about. He's, for this disaster, he's actually approved every order, every request that California has made for disaster relief at each stage, and it is a staged process that FEMA has.
Do you have any thoughts on simply the propriety of making a comment like that?
I'm not going to get into that, because this is someone we need to work with in order to continue the work that's being done and the declarations and such. So let the media, let the people that dislike the president have a field day with that. We're going to keep working together to accomplish what we need to for short term.
And can you tell us anything about the cooperation person to person between President Trump and Jerry Brown and his successor who's coming in, Gavin Newsom? Obviously, there's some personal animus there, but as you say, the federal funding is coming through.
Well, we saw that, you know, right in the beginning of the Trump administration when the Oroville Dam had its crisis there with the spillway disaster they had there. And that was right at the height of immediately after the president's election and swearing in that California decided to go on a complete jihad against the president for just opposing for opposition purposes. But soon after that, the governor had to make the request of the president, and I also called the White House as well to, you know, pave the way, whatever that politics looked like. But the president responded within a short amount of time on every single disaster California's asked about.
And that was Congressman Doug LaMalfa.
Well, we're going to step away from fires and just focus solely on politics. In any other news cycle, this would be the top story. 15-term Republican Congressman Dana Rohrabacher has been voted out of his Orange County district. Here's KQED's Scott Schaefer.
Rohrabacher's defeat by Democrat Harley Ruda in the Republican stronghold of Orange County is a stunning turnaround from 2 years ago, when Rohrabacher won re-election by 17 points. His defeat, along with two other Democratic victories in Southern California, further shrinks the number of GOP-held seats in the state from 14 now down to 11. Democrats could pick up one or more additional seats. In the Modesto area, incumbent Jeff Denham has slipped behind his Democratic challenger Josh Harder by more than 3,000 votes, but it's still too close to call, as are two other seats in Orange County, where Republicans have slim leads as the counting continues.
That's KQED's Scott Schaefer.
Support for the California Report comes from Block Construction, a builder committed to enhancing communities in the Bay Area and Central Coast. BLACH.com. Block Construction, together building greatness. The Pacific Auction Company, dedicated to making fundraising auctions successful for 16 years, serving nonprofits, schools, and foundations. Learn more at PacificAuctionCompany.com. And Eric and Wendy Schmidt, whose Fund for Strategic Innovation supports transformative ideas that benefit humanity while protecting the natural world, recognizing through science the interdependence of all living systems.
You know, Lily, I'm on the west side of Los Angeles right now, which is an area full of environmental activists, as it happens to be. These are folks who run national organizations like the Conservation Networks or the Sierra Club. And all of them are telling me every time you talk about this fire, you need to talk about climate change. And I can't do that because I'm not a scientist and I can't connect, you know, I can't say for sure that this fire was caused by climate change. But it's very clear to me that that is going to be the message out of these environmental groups for the next year, 2 years, 5 years, the rest of our lives.
Yeah, and I think you can expect that will be the message from the current governor, Jerry Brown. It already was. You probably heard last night him talking about it with a lot of force and animation. And Gavin Newsom clearly falls on the same side of that issue as Jerry Brown. So expect to hear a whole lot more about that in the coming days, weeks, and beyond.
Anecdotally, though, Lily, I can tell you something seems strange. It's not just the fire tornadoes that we're seeing both in, you know, the Santa Monica Mountains here or in near Paradise up there. It's not the extreme heat that we're seeing. It's not the precipitation maps that I've been poring over. It's just little things. Like, I went surfing this past weekend. I took a break from the fire coverage. I needed to, like, clear my head and my sinuses because they were filled with ash. And I jumped into the water. And I didn't need a wetsuit. And it's almost the middle of November. And I've been surfing my whole life. And there seems to be something really wrong with the ocean when I am not freezing my behind off without a wetsuit, you know, off the coast of San Diego.
Well, as you may remember, John, I am also a California girl. I actually started my broadcast career right here in this area, actually up a little ways in Redding. And I keep thinking about the weather these last couple of days and how odd it is that I am cold around dusk during fire season. The notion that there is even a wildfire taking place that we are covering in the month of November is beyond me.
Well, we are going to be keeping an eye on these wildfires, and we'll definitely be looking for any links between long-term climate change and these short-term horrific disasters. As for now, this has been the California Report podcast. I'm John Sepulveda in Santa Monica.
And I'm Lily Jamali, hosted very graciously by North State Public Radio. Thanks to them here in Chico.